Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the D.C. It is Saturday, the 11th of April, Anno Domini 2015, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Apple. There are times in life when you wonder what it is you've done to deserve such neglect from those you hold dear. It's a feeling that plenty of Mac users will be experiencing, as Apple has announced that it found a serious security flaw in OS X, but will only fix it for users of the latest version. If you aren't running Yosemite, which was updated yesterday with the relevant patch, then you'd better get it, and quick. The long story here is that the flaw enabled nefarious types to get root access to your system by exploiting a backdoor in the System Preferences app. Essentially, this enables any hacker to make themselves the administrator of your computer with all of the terrible consequences that come with it. The flaw was discovered by security researcher Emil Kvarnhammer at TruSec back in October, but has actually existed since at least 2011. According to Apple Insider, Apple has declined to make the fix work for Mavericks and Mountain Lion users because of the, and I quote, complexity of the fix, end quote. So Apple has decided that those of you using Mavericks and Mountain Lion, they're not going to bother with you. Did we mention you should probably get onto the Yosemite bandwagon right now? Because that's something you should be doing right now. It's still free, you know. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is there's a serious OS X security flaw. And the choices are, I've got Yosemite, so no worries. I'm going to Yosemite, so that's okay. I don't have Yosemite and I'm worried. I don't have Yosemite and I'm not worried. And yo, what now? So far, we've got 20 votes. The vast majority of you have no idea what Yosemite is, except a SAM or a national park. And I know that you will have more to say. So if you head down to the forums, just on the right-hand column, if you go down to Fascinating Stuff, the top thing is the forums. And if you go to the forums, the second one is the poll discussion. And go to 11 April 15, there's a serious OS X security flaw. And then, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
So one of the problems in going to Yosemite, it's similar to what Windows users have run into, is you may need to add more memory to your computer. You may need more hard drive space. You may need to buy all new programs to be compatible. And so even though the OS itself is free, it may cost you hundreds of dollars in other upgrades that it requires.
But that's true with just about any operating system. They always
not Linux.
Well, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Mainstream application.
As you can, but I'm saying the Windows world, the Microsoft side and the Mac side, as you have always said, the price of poker keeps going up.
Every time.
You want to get in the game and get into that particular hand, you got to ante up.
And that's one of the big reasons.
Just to do it.
Yeah, and that's one of the big reasons people don't upgrade. What I have now seems to be working for me. And it's going to cost too much to upgrade. Yep.
I mean, they're still holding on to. I mean, I've got folks still with the XP.
Rampant security flaws don't seem to bother people.
Right, apparently they don't.
Until they get the fake message about their virus and turn over their credit card information and bring their computer into
and
us.
That's one thing, though, and I've been telling folks this for a while. Viruses, like back in the days when we were doing stuff, viruses aren't as prevalent as nowadays. I mean, it used to be cool, you know, 10, 15 years ago to do a virus and it'd sit there and, oh, it'd erase some files and it'd lock up this and that.
Vandalism.
And do that. Yeah.
Right.
The people that did all these programs, the script kiddies and all that, got a little smarter, if you want to call it that. And they learned, well, viruses really aren't achieving me anything because I don't really gain anything out of it. Whereas if they write these little scripts to say, as an example, go out there, I put out a program, and I collect email addresses. So if I can get into your computer and grab your email list, and I'm doing this on billions, that's B with a billion, for billions, folks, of email addresses. And then I turn around and sell those to a spammer or somebody looking for to promote sales in this particular product or that. All of a sudden, now I can make money.
Yep.
Whereas viruses didn't get me any money. Now this little program that I created and I just sit back and they just keep coming in. And then I turn to the spammers and say, hey, you know, I can give you, say, 2 million email addresses. Give me $50. They're now making money. They're happy.
Yep.
So that's where...
The problem is, though...
The malware and spyware is taking over.
Right, except that there's still a lot of viruses that are out there.
Oh, yes. I'm not saying that they've gone. No,
right,
definitely.
Right. So you should still protect yourself against them. But you're right. There aren't new ones, as many new ones being written.
Exactly. Remember when we had the other program we had to run... what was it?
It was Stinger.
Stinger,
we had to run...
Stinger just got updated a while ago. So there's still life in Stinger.
Well, like you said,
that's why it's still in the security
tango.
But
the thing that is, though, is what they're doing is they're taking the old ones and just trying to give them a new name and a new twist.
Right.
And that's they're really
that's a lot easier than trying to think up something new.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And again, they don't derive anything from it.
Right. Right. So. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Question. I've got an old Lenovo, well, not that old, but a Lenovo laptop that had XP on it, still does. We're not using it, but I want to convert it over to Linux.
Yep.
Because the hardware is still good, and it's, you know, I just can't see getting rid of it because the thing works fine. Except for the software problem. Been doing some research, and it seems like Linux Mint seems to be a well thought of Linux package at this point.
It's Mint.
When I go out and go looking, everything says, well, here's how you dual boot. You know, download this to dual boot the machine. I don't want to dual boot the machine. I want to nuke what's in there and put in the Linux. Where would I go to get that information? Because when I did a Google search, the first two pages of options were dual booting, along with some very nice reviews of the product.
You basically skip the first couple of steps and start with install Linux.
Yeah, basically what happens is this. What you do is you download your copy of Mint and you burn it to a CD and then you boot up the machine booting to the CD and you'll get a number of choices at that boot up menu.
Oh, all right.
One is to play with it off the CD, which you can certainly do, and that's not a bad idea because then you can see how much of your hardware it seems to work with.
Okay.
But be aware that it will be horribly, horribly slow because CD-ROM drives are horribly, horribly slow.
So a lot of people use USB keys because they're a little faster.
But I don't think I can boot them. I don't think I can boot this thing off a USB key.
Right. And then another choice will be to dual boot, now I don't know Linux Mint that well. And a third choice would be to just install it clean. But at some point, you will get a choice of dual boot or install clean, and you just have to read every screen before you say
of course.
Yes. Well, yeah, we know that. I'm just reminding everybody else. You should be able to do either one of those things from any version of Mint.
And the first sort of key trick is that you can't just burn the ISO. You'll be downloading an ISO file, an image of a CD, basically, as if you got a physical CD. You have to burn that image to a CD in ISO format, so you can't just drag the file to the CD and burn it. So you need a program. I found there's a couple of them called Startup Disk Creator or UNetBoot on the Linux Mint install page that tells you how to create that ISO image on the disk rather than just burning it to the disk, because that won't boot. It has to be a bootable CD.
need the UNET boot to create an ISO image.
To burn an ISO image to a CD, yeah.
Okay.
Well, he's got Windows right now, so.
So you can do it inside of Windows, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, you'll download the Linux ISO from inside of Windows, and then use the Windows tool to burn that ISO to the disk.
Well, yeah, because I'm going to be I'll be making the CD to put in the laptop on my main computer, which is a Windows 7 box.
Yeah. Right.
So that's updated and everything, but I'm not turning this thing on or hooking it up to the network anywhere until I get it cleaned up.
Good idea. Here's the thing. What I did was I Googled how to install Linux Mint, and one of the choices takes me to WikiHow, the first one that isn't...
With pictures.
Okay.
And what it does is, according to this, the newest version of Linux Mint just automatically boots to a desktop, so it'll take a while, but then there's an icon on the desktop that says install Linux Mint, and when you double-click on that... it tells you you've got at least 8 gig of RAM. Is it connected to the internet? Blah 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 blah. And then you get another screen that gives you a choice of erase the disk and install Linux Mint, or do other things. And it doesn't matter what they are. But the point is, one of them is erase the disk and install Linux Mint. That's the one you want. That will completely remove Windows and install Linux Mint instead.
Okay, and that would be burned onto the CD that I create?
That's that, yeah, exactly. When you boot that CD, it'll take you to a Linux Mint desktop. One of the icons will be install Linux Mint, and as you go through it, that will be one of the choices on one of the screens.
Okay. Now all I got to do is remember how to get this Linux so that it'll boot off the CD drive.
Well, now you're on your own for that.
Yeah, well, but I can go through the Lenovo, and I'm sure there's something in the startup.
Just start banging all the keys, F1, F2, F3,
yeah,
delete, F10, F12, and F12.
It's generally F2 or F12.
Yeah.
It pops up on the screen when I first turn it on.
Yeah,
I think so too.
I love those computers that say, press whatever for setup. Thank you.
Exactly.
That's well, the only problem with that is it tends to go away faster than I can read it.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, you got to sit there. You might have to boot it a couple times.
Oh, my father-in-law just recently passed, and I went and redid his computers and checked them out. And with one of his laptops, he had it essentially set to zero. You know, the wait time. Mm-hmm. I must have booted it up 8 times before I read the entire message and got to the F12. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is Dave still available to take donations?
You can always... You mean to the station?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go to jazz901.org.
Yep.
And there's a donate
There's
button in the upper right.
Yep.
Click on that.
And just put, you know, say that it's for soundbite, please.
Yeah, and there are levels you can pledge at, or you can just pick one of the blank ones and do that. But
I got to go online to do it. I can't just talk to Dave and have him take the information.
Yeah, no, we don't trust Dave anymore.
Oh, gee.
No, doing it online is indeed.
Yeah, we're not set up
safer.
Right in the moment.
Okay.
But we appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Andy. We appreciate it. We love our members. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the information. I enjoy it. Usually I'm driving around doing my Saturday runarounds when I'm listening to you, so it makes it a little hard to call in. So every once in a while when I need to talk to you, I delay my going and doing my errands so I can actually sit down and talk to you.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you so much.
But thank you very much, and we'll see if we can get this laptop resurrected here.
Perfect. Let us know.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's one thing we should say right now. I can't thank all the listeners.
Yeah.
As you notice, folks, we're not into the membership mode. We're just sitting there simply taking questions and answers. You know why? It's because you folks all took the time, and we can't thank our loyal listeners to Soundbites enough for stepping up to the plate, because we came within $1,500 of meeting our goal. Now, with Andy pledging... That's going to even get us...
Because he's going to easily give us $1,500.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's a pocket change for him. But you know what?
Andy just hit a coronary or laughed himself sick.
One of the two. But either or. I mean, we're here, and you know, we can't... Nick, Steve, and I can't thank you guys enough for every time that we come to you. Only twice a year. But you know what? Our loyal listeners step up to the plate, They make it happen because they want us still around every week. They know the time that we give up, and it's really kind of a nice slap on the back to us and, you know, patting us and saying, you know, yeah, keep it going, guys, because we really love what you're doing, and we can't thank you guys enough. I know I'm repeating myself, but it's overwhelming, the loyal listeners that we have out there and the support that we get, because as you folks all know, we've said it countless times, we don't get any public funds. We don't get any state aid. Right. We are strictly on the air due to you listeners.
And as I said last week, thank you so much. But, you know, because we did not make our goal, there will be changes. We came close enough that the changes will be minimum, so it is unlikely that we will be affected in any way, but that's always a possibility. So thank you to all those who did indeed donate. We appreciate it very much.
Well, I'll say on Wednesday, April 1st, Jazz station manager Rob Litton posted that since we didn't make our pledge drive, we're going to have to change format to country.
Right.
And at 4 o'clock, started playing country music.
Yeah, he did.
And some people didn't realize it was April Fool's Day.
Right, they were very upset. But yeah, you don't pledge, stuff happens.
I was going to come in and do a Wednesday night show and do the 60s and 70s.
There you go.
But he wouldn't let me.
There you go. I would have come in and played classical music for 2 hours.
There you go.
Absolutely. But also, as long as we are talking about this stuff, you should get online and get your tickets. For the jazz cruises.
They're selling out, too.
They are selling out fast. May 18th, especially June 8th, July 13th, and August 17th.
There's a package where you can buy all the tickets at a discount.
Yep.
Right. And it's basically a two-hour boat ride along the historic Erie Canal. It's a great time. I hope to make at least three of them.
Goes through my backyard, just about.
Jump on. Yeah. As we go by, take a running leap.
Yeah.
Ooh. I just want the video. I don't really care if he makes the boat or not. I just want the video.
See Steve Ray. Boosh, splash.
Yeah, you got to worry when you fall in the canal, you may be eaten by any of the thousands of canal monsters that roam up and down the Erie Canal from
the Genesee River.
Right. It's terrible. All right, back to the...
When's the rubber ducky launch?
Oh, I know.
And Fairport Canal days when they fill it with rubber duckies.
Our next caller is going to have to wait. Sorry, hold on. Stay on the line, Ray. We apparently just ran over. Going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. Ray is on the line, and you. It's 22 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 27 minutes after the hour, we have Ray from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Well, I just want to tag along with the prior caller. I got a couple old PCs, and I've been trying to play around with Linux. And I did put Ubuntu, I believe it is, from a flash drive on one of the PCs. It seems to work fine. You were talking about Mint. Would that be something more user-friendly than what I'm trying to play with, or is there...
Well, what I would do if I were you is I would take a look at the various websites. And each of them has a slightly different look to it. You've probably got Ubuntu with that strip down the side that pops out with all that stuff on it.
Yes.
A lot of people don't like that. And the Linux Mint thing is actually much closer to what Linux, excuse me, what... Windows originally looked like. So
didn't Microsoft call that the gadget bar when they invented it?
Yeah, Unity is what it's called under Ubuntu. But yeah, so if you take a look at what Linux Mint looks like on the website, there's a couple of different versions. The latest one is 17.1, which is called Rebecca. and you can get the Cinnamon Edition or the Mate Edition or the KDE Edition or the XFCE Edition the something else Edition. But there are multiple editions, and you should take a look at what they look like and what features they have. One of the things that Linux gives you is multiple choices. What that means is you have to understand those choices and pick one.
Okay.
A lot of people actually seem to like Mate, or as it looks like it says, Mate. Mate looks similar in many ways.
I want a mate, not two.
Not two mates. Yeah, ain't mating with me, sunshine. Mate has, on the lower left is a menu button, and it's got a button bar across the... It looks very much like Windows, like the original Windows, like XP.
Do they all... I noticed when I installed this version here, it came with LibreOffice, which I kind of like that idea. Do they all come with that also, or is that something separate that you put on?
They generally come with it.
Okay.
And all of them have a software installer app where if it didn't install it, you could open that up, type Libre, L-I-B-R-E, and it would pop up all the choices for LibreOffice and et cetera. And you can just hit enter. That's one of the beauties of Linux is you don't have to pay for the software, and there's 19,000 packages available. So you're going to find something you like somewhere along the line.
Right.
So go ahead.
Would other software that I have on my PC now still be able to be installed, or would that be something kind of like possibly not?
No, you can't install Windows software under Linux. Generally, there is a thing called Wine that lets you do that, but it's not for beginners. There is.
It's not that easy for advanced users either.
Yeah, right, exactly. But there is a website called alternative2.net. That's TO2.
Okay.
And what you do is you type in a product you would like an alternative for. You know, you can go to the Windows page or the Mac page or the Linux page. So let's say you go to the Linux page and say, I want an alternative to, say, Photoshop. Right?
Okay.
And so it comes up with Photoshop alternatives for Linux. GIMP and MyPaint and a bunch of others that are mostly free. Mostly already built into your distribution. So, like I said, you open up the software app, and it will let you, you know, and type in GIMP or MyPaint, and it will say, "Okay, here it is. What do you want to do?" I'll click the install button, and bang, it gets installed. Basically, there's a bunch of stuff that's available to you that works similar to, identical to, some would say better than most commercial packages. They will be slightly different, most of them. So you're going to have to learn, you know, if you're a big Photoshop user, using the GIMP or MyPaint or even GIMP Shop or Pinta is going to be difficult at first. But again, you learn Photoshop. God knows that's hard enough. You can certainly learn a different package.
Right.
Photoshop just celebrated its, like, 30th anniversary or something like that.
25, I think.
25,
it was,
and they took some Photoshop experts and gave them Photoshop 1 running on a Mac Plus, and said, "Here, that's where you started."
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh! How did
that... Yeah, and every single one of them turned up their nose at it. But at any rate, the point here is that with a product like Alternative2.net, you can find lots and lots of alternatives, most of them free. You can, and by the way, for those of you who are not looking at Linux, those of you who have Macs or PCs, or Windows machines rather, you can find alternatives for the standard programs you use in Windows or the Mac as well. If you don't want to pay for, say, Photoshop, the GIMP and MyPaint and Pinta and the other things I mentioned all work on the Mac and all work on Windows. So instead of paying hundreds of dollars for Photoshop, you can have the GIMP or MyPaint for free. So it doesn't, and you know, so you try it and you hate it, uninstall it. You've lost an hour of your time and no money, right? But for the Linux people, they're great. For anybody, they're great alternatives. They're free. And if you install them through the operating system, through the distribution, They'll all update automatically when there are updates. Well, the, I mean, you'll have to say yes to an update, but they'll all be updatable. You don't have to go here to update this one and there to update the other one and somewhere else to update the next one under Linux. So there are a lot of good reasons to use Linux. Every once in a while, I get a little pop-up box that says, there are updates available. Do you want to update? And I say yes, and a minute later I'm updated and I'm done. Most of the time I don't even have to reboot.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good luck. I think you'll enjoy Linux. I really do. I think, you know, again, it's a different operating system. And like I say before, it's like buying a new car. You already know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is.
Right.
It's the same idea here. Linux is no different in concept than Windows or the Mac. It just works. You just have to, it's finger memory has to change.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll give it a try. Thank you again.
Have fun.
And it is a great way to repurpose an old computer that doesn't have enough oomph for the latest Mac yeah. OS or Windows OS.
Right.
And you're learning something else new.
Right, exactly right. And you know what? I found, like I said, until I bought that Windows machine last year for teaching, I haven't had a Windows machine in, I want to say 20 years, but it may only be 15. And I, there's nothing I can't do.
So you're used to Windows 3?
And I, I used Windows at work. I didn't buy myself a Windows machine. I'd forgotten when I bought this thing, I had to buy software for it. I had to go more than one place to update it. I was outraged. It's hard running Windows.
And Steve, it wasn't Windows 3. It was Windows 286.
Ah.
Remember that?
Yep. I remember Windows.
It didn't last long.
I still have floppy disks for Windows 286. 3.5-inch floppies.
I had still the floppies for Windows 3.11. All the floppies there.
Wow.
I've got an unopened Excel 1 box.
New
with manuals.
New inbox. You should do an unboxing
NIV.
Video.
I should do an unboxing video.
And then where do I put this floppy disk into my new computer?
Okay, we're done now. It's
5.25.
And for these kids today,
this does not work in my Chromebook. Yeah.
Those floppy disks aren't very floppy. They weren't named very well.
Yeah, they
actually, I remember it was one of the manufacturers was calling them a micro flexi disk. Because the five and a half ones were actually floppy.
Five and a quarter were floppy.
Yeah,
they were.
So the
8-inch discs were the floppy discs.
Yes, those were.
Yeah, those were cool. Those were pretty cool.
What, 32K?
Yeah.
Yep.
No, some of them went up to 100K.
Yeah.
Doggone it.
Well,
the 5.25s on the first Apple IIs I was using were like 114K.
They went up. They started out at 100K, then they went to 116K, and you Apple sent out free little sparkly red Apple stickers to put on the 116K disc so you wouldn't confuse them.
Then did you get the hole punch so you could flip it over into the second side?
Oh,
I always wondered why they coated the second side if they didn't intend it to be used.
Well, you can get double-sided discs.
Yeah, so it was they probably only made one and then sold it.
That was the trick. That was a trick. You punched it and flipped to see if they
double-sided. You literally had to turn it over and use the other side. Yeah,
not on a double-sided drive.
No,
right?
That came later.
They made floppy disks the same way they make computer chips. They only make one kind,
right?
And then they test them. And let's say they need a 2 gigahertz chip. Hmm. The ones that fail the 2 gigahertz chip, they take out and they test at 1.5 gigahertz. Mm-hmm. And if they fail that, they test it at 1 gigahertz. But when they fill the 2 gigahertz quota, they only test at 1.5 gigahertz. So you may get, that's why some people have success in overclocking,
because
they've really got a chip that works fine at 2 gigahertz,
but it wasn't sold as that.
But it wasn't sold as that because they already had that quota.
Yep.
And the same thing with double sided floppy disks. They made them all double sided, and some of them failed the second side.
Mm-hmm.
Those became single-sided
discs. Yep.
But once they filled their quota of double-sided discs, they didn't even bother to check the second side because it just meant they could turn them out faster, not check them. So you often got a disc that was perfectly fine double-sided. In fact, many of them were. The problem with creating a double-sided disc was you turned it over, which meant now it was rotating backwards.
Yeah.
And that was a problem because the felt inside had a nap. And if you screwed up the nap, you could
you had to nibble that
pull
out,
the
very
rust
careful.
Out. Yeah, to pull the rust out. So there was that's old stuff though. That's old school stuff.
I still remember.
Most of you young puppies don't have any idea.
Microsoft Word version 5 came on 65 floppy disks.
Yeah,
or one CD.
Yep.
That was the transition. And it was always you're on disk 60 of 65, and it failed, and you had to start over.
Invariably. Invariably, the first time I actually installed from a CD, I said, holy moly, I'm never going back. This is great.
And now we say CDs are so slow.
CDs are so slow. Back then, they were hot stuff, man. They were hot stuff indeed. Well, as you know, we're hot stuff, and we're here for a whole bunch more time, but we're going to take a quick break just to cool down. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites, and it is the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Walter from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, guys. I'm a Linux user since 2004. Still have my Marcel Gagné's Moving to Linux book.
Oh, nice book, too, isn't it?
It is marvelous. And really, if anybody can find it, it explains it real easy about Linux. And you can see that it just hasn't changed drastically over the years. I mean, it's still applicable. Like you were saying earlier, you don't have to worry about many things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, but do you mind if I put in a plug for one Linux form that people might want to consider? It's really easy. I think it's very user-friendly.
Sure.
I've been using on one of my laptops Linux Lite, L-I-T-E. And it's what's really nice about it is that included on the disk and installation is a handbook. So if you have any questions, not only do you have a chance at a form, but it's right there on your desktop to go ahead and do some referencing into it. So it's easy to go. It comes with LibreOffice and VLC and so many other things. It's ready.
Oh,
ready
nice.
For you. I strongly recommend it.
Excellent. What a nice I'd see. There's so many versions and I don't know half of them anymore, but this is great.
Yeah. Now, can I bring up my question then? I'm listening to you earlier, you're talking about the problem that the Mac has, that is, Yosemite has there's a fault.
Yeah.
And, well, the Mac world is based on Unix, which is like Linux, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, then I'm also hearing that there are malicious apps that are part on Android. And Android is like a offshoot of Linux, right?
Right.
So do you think there's any fear that these two things, the Mac world and Android, they're getting hit? I'm not aware of anything happening yet, occasionally maybe, with Linux. And I run what you have on the Tango, Security Tango. I haven't run into any issues at all. Maybe sometimes the antivirus clam looks at things and gets a little picky, but you know, that's what I'm getting at. Do you think they're going to try to start migrating more into the Linux world?
Well, yeah, yes and no. Here's the thing. With something like OS X Yosemite, or with Google Android, most of the problems, most of the vulnerabilities are coming through on, all right, let me take one at a time. On Google Apps, most of the vulnerabilities are coming through on third-party apps.
Okay.
One of the things we've been saying for the longest time is that Google has been slow to sweep through its store and get rid of the bad stuff.
Yeah.
That's been a criticism of Google since day one. On Yosemite, the latest problem is actually caused by one of Apple's own programs that sits on top of Linux.
Uh-huh.
Now, so that's, you know, in some ways, I guess, similar to an app. I mean, right? It's not
right.
The underlying operating system. It's something Apple added to the underlying operating system.
Right.
Linux does have its share of issues, and it does have its share of problems. They're mitigated by the fact that it is actually kind of difficult to run as administrator. So problems that occur can't generally get escalated privileges to do real damage. And secondly, honestly, Linux is a fairly small percentage of the machines that are out there.
Yeah, the bad guys want to go where the money is.
Right, exactly.
And that's typically why Windows has been the first target, and then the Macintosh.
Right.
But now with the huge growth in mobile, we're seeing Android and iOS attacks as well.
Exactly. Well, there's a thing called, there's a Black Hat conference every year called Pwn to Own, P-W-N to Own. And what they do is they put up a bounty of a certain amount of money and a high-end computer if you can break into it. And they always set up one Linux box, one Windows box, one Mac, and lately they've added Chromebooks to that. Every year the Mac falls within seconds. And they're all exploits from Apple's own code, not from the underlying operating system. The Windows machine is not far behind. The Linux box, I think, fell once, and the Chromebook hasn't fallen at all. So, and these are people who are incentivized to get, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in a very high-end computer out of the deal. So
there's more than $1 million worth of prize money available for different hacks on different systems.
Right, exactly. So we really are looking at the fact that both Mac and Windows are highly vulnerable because of the code that Apple and Microsoft have put into them. Linux far less so, and Chromebook kind of not at all. But on the other end, with the iPhone and the Android phone, it's really up to Apple and Google to police their own stores. Apple does an amazing job at it, and Google is finally starting to wake up to that, but they're very far behind. Does that make sense? Hello? Did we lose him?
Yeah,
Walter?
Maybe the phone mess. But yeah, so it's the famous quote about why rob banks, because that's where the money is. And so the bad guys target Windows users, Mac users. They target where the money is in order to get the money now. Because it's, as we mentioned earlier, the threat matrix has been changing. That it's not just about vandalizing websites or you know, making your mark known. It's actually about stealing money, stealing identities to steal money, stealing email addresses to steal money.
Right, right, right.
We've got Walter back.
Oh, Walter, welcome back. Sorry we lost you. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know what happened either. I just had us sit holding the phone, and suddenly there was a click and gone. So, great explanation. And, let me get out of the way because you might be getting feedback from the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering, Linux must be very secure because I can recall, when there was a notice that XP would be ending soon, I guess like in Munich, Germany, they handed out to all of the population, here's a version of Linux, use it, get rid of it, you know. And,
yep.
I mean, the whole city basically went that way because people didn't want to pay for moving up from XP.
And right. one of the things that we often see in the Linux world is that the guy that finds the problem will fix it and distribute it, you know, usually that same day.
Right.
In the large commercial software, in fact, this Yosemite vulnerability was found October, you say? But they don't announce the details because they give the publisher time to fix it before it gets announced. Because as soon as it gets announced, we know there are people that won't update, and so the bad guys have that vulnerability. You know, we joked about that in the Windows world, that Patch Tuesday is followed by Exploit Thursday.
Right.
While the patches that get announced and fixed on Tuesday, the bad guys will have an exploit on Thursday for people that haven't updated yet.
Right. Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I, as a Linux user, though, is every time when I boot up the computer, I go over to my administrator level, and then I search for the updates.
Yep.
And
right.
then, you know, using Synaptic, and this way I feel I'm ready to go, put it in, reboot it, I know I'm secure, and off I run. And it's nice knowing I have a secure machine every day.
Yep.
Yep, exactly right. And
although
for those of you,
the CVE does list 262 vulnerabilities in Unix that have been found and patched.
And patched.
So they are there. It's just it's not as widespread and well known in the general media because Linux is not a very high market share.
Right. For those of you who are interested in Marcel Gagné, he has a website called cookingwithlinux.com.
Yep.
Which is some great stuff. It's all about open source software. He used to write a column in one of the magazines, maybe still does for all I know. And it's some pretty excellent stuff. And of course, he has his own website at marcelgagné.com, and that's marcelgagne.com. And he's got some pretty cool stuff out. He's also an author and a bunch of stuff. Oh, Linux Journal, ran for 10 years in the Linux Journal. He's a science fiction author and an editor and does a whole lot of stuff, but he's a pretty cool guy.
He is indeed. Yeah. And well, I'll let you guys go. I thank you very much for relaying my thoughts about any other vulnerabilities, because again, hearing about all those other versions or derivatives, however, of the Unix, Linux world, it's like, maybe I'm wondering, but you know, could there be something? But you've allayed my concerns greatly. Thank you, Nick.
And thank you for the Linux Lite tip.
Okay, you're welcome.
Have fun.
Okay, thank you.
Bye bye. For those of you who are confused that he pronounces it Linux and I pronounce it Linux, it's just tomato, tomato. It's all the same operating system. The guy who invented it, Linus Torvalds, calls it Linux, but then he's like Scandahoovian somewhere up there. So he gets to have a different accent than we do. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. Off the subject completely, I did move a laptop to Linux Mint. I do like it. It's very similar to Windows, but you cannot get away without doing some coding. I have found that someone's already written it. All I got to do is find it on the net and then post it in, but you do end up doing some coding. My question is the GIFs, whichever is correct, that you see on a net with sometimes they're just video, sometimes video and sound. I've been able to copy some, play them back just the way I saw them on the computer. Others, when I play back, will play back extremely quickly or they'll be extremely pixelated. Is there a way of correcting that?
No. Okay. What the problem is that they've done, it's a couple of different things. One is when you create a GIF, you can create it either timing independent or timing dependent. Timing dependent is easier and faster. The problem is it is then dependent on the speed of the system you've created it on. And generally speaking, and I know this is kind of counterintuitive, but many servers are actually slower than many desktops because they aren't really doing a lot. I mean, they don't have to push pixels on a screen or any of that stuff. They're really just storing stuff and moving it over to somebody else.
And a zillion people might be connected to that server at any given minute.
And a zillion people might be connected. So they actually run it real fast, knowing that when you play it, it'll be slower. But the timing is very different. Sometimes the timing is based on your screen speed. Sometimes the timing is just however the person who created it did it themselves, right? So they may have a slower machine than you have. And there's really, I've not found anything that fixes that. That if somebody out there knows of something, I'd love to know about it, but I don't know of anything. Sorry.
Okay. And that's the same with the pixelation type of thing.
Yep. Yeah, you're downloading a lower res version, and that has to do with the way they programmed it. They don't want you having the high end. The high-res version. They want you to have a low-res version because then you have to keep coming back to their website for the high-res version.
Right, right. Well, that's disappointing, but...
Well, yeah. It's also assuming that they're GIFs and not actually video of some sort.
It could be flash or Silverlight and not GIF.
Right, right, right.
Well, if they end up with a GIF extension, does that mean they still may not be GIFs?
Well, they should be, yes.
But it may be embedded inside of a flash frame
or
a Silverlight frame that's actually controlling the GIF playback.
Right.
Well, you disappointed me, guys. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry, Steve. I apologize. I don't know what to say.
All right.
Please forgive us.
I'll let it go this time.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. And for those of you on the GIF versus GIF issue, the guy who created it calls them GIFs because then he could make the pun, choosy users choose GIFs. And that alone makes me say GIFs every time just because the pun is so bad.
No trademark infringement.
It's cute.
Well, because that's J-I-F-F.
Right.
Yeah,
yep.
GIFs.
J-I-F-F, GIF. Anyway, this is GIF, the graphic interchange format. And I know the G is for graphic, and that's a hard G, so it should be GIFs. But like I said, the person who invented it called it GIFs so that he could make the pun, and I'm not going to kill a pun just for something like logic. That's ridiculous. Listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. You've wasted an hour of your life doing this, but for you slow learners, we're going to give you another chance to do it all over again. So stay tuned, and we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. We'll be taking your calls. We'll be talking about news. We'll probably have somebody call up and berate me about GIF versus GIF and other people who hate Linux. We'll have everybody all playing around together on a whole lot more of, you guessed it, say it with me, sound bites.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, I told you that time passed in a jiffy.
Or giffy.
For those of you who did not listen to the last hour, we just had a discussion of GIF versus GIF.
And Linux versus Linux.
And Linux versus
tomato
Linux.
Tomato versus tomato.
Yeah. Exactly. Chili and chai lai.
Aluminum and aluminium.
Francesco versus Francisco.
Yeah.
But we're back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, all of you. Give us a call. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Like I said, we had a good discussion the first hour. We really did. We talked about various versions of Linux and getting old PCs started. And Marcel Gagné, that's French, so although it's pronounced Gagné. It's spelled Gagné, it's pronounced Gagné. Again, he gets to do that. It's his language, I guess, so that's allowed. And now we're back, and our next caller is Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's up?
You answered this question a couple weeks ago, but I did not write it down.
Tisk tisk, I say.
I know. I thought I had it. It's doing it in Word, and it's doing it on my Gmail, where I type something and then I want to change it, and it's deleting the words, the letters in front of the thing I'm trying to delete.
Instead of overwriting them.
Yes.
Okay, on your keyboard.
Yes.
And this is on a standard keyboard, yep. And I don't have one in front of me, so I can't see what it is. But there's an insert key. There's the regular keyboard stuff, and then over on the right, there's the keypad.
Okay, there's
and
an
in
insert.
Between those two,
yep.
There's the arrow keys, and above that, some keys.
Yes.
There's an insert key there.
It may okay. be labeled just INS.
It could be just INS.
Mine says insert. Okay. Yep.
If you go into Word or Gmail and hit that key, it will turn off. It's a toggle between insert, which when you type pushes all the other letters to the right.
Okay.
And overwrite, which replaces the other letters.
So how do I keep making it end up needing that?
Well, it's one of two things. Either your keyboard is set to do that, which is really unlikely, or you're just kind of hitting it by accident while you're doing other things.
Okay. So I might be, instead of hitting the delete button, which right below it, I might hit the insert, and it would...
Those times okay. you fall asleep at the computer and bang your forehead on the keyboard?
Okay, I do that too. Okay, I'm going to write that down now.
Which operating system are you running?
Windows 7.
Windows 7, because most operating systems have a way to disable that key, so it doesn't... that's regedit. We don't want to do that.
So you don't accidentally
type it.
Okay.
But in general, my suggestion is just make sure you hit that key. There okay. may even be a light on the keyboard for that key.
I think Word has a light. A little INS pops up somewhere in
on the bottom.
Tool,
on the bottom,
yeah.
There's a bottom bar across okay. the at the bottom of the Word screen, the Word window, not the Windows button bar at the bottom, but above that in the actual window.
Okay.
And you'll see that goes from INS to
okay.
I think nothing.
I'm going to put a little sticker on my insert button. What there a you no go. On it.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people hit it accidentally when they're going to hit home or end.
Yeah.
So they go to the top of a screen or the bottom of a screen.
Yeah. I think that's what's probably going on. I wrote it down now.
There you go.
Thank you.
Good luck, Joanne.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yep.
It's one of those keys that'll probably be removed. We've also started seeing the caps lock key is being removed from keyboards.
Right.
Chromebook
has none of this.
Almost no reason to type in all caps. It's generally considered shouting on the internet.
Yeah, right.
And if you want to emphasize something, you use bold and not all caps. So
right.
So that insert key. One thing we get a lot of questions on in the Mac world is PCs have a delete forward and a delete backward key.
Right.
So it either deletes to the left or deletes to the right. On the shorter Mac keyboards, there's only one delete key.
Right.
If you hold down a function delete or control delete, depending on your keyboard, it will delete the other way.
Right.
So we're so used to hitting the delete key and it deletes the previous character. We'll see people will arrow 20 times and then delete 20 times to delete the word they want to. And using that forward delete can be a lot faster. On the extended keyboards, usually near that insert key, there's also a delete key, which deletes the other direction.
Right.
And on a PC keyboard, it's usually labeled backspace,
right.
which is the more technically accurate term because it goes back. What was it on one terminal I used? It was called rubout in the olden days because it moves back one character. It prints a space, which then overwrites the character that's there and then moves back one more character to in essence.
Oh, okay.
And in the olden days, that's actually how delete worked because we didn't have these fancy graphical terminals. It had to back up and overwrite. But yeah, so backspace and delete tend to be different functions. And on a PC keyboard, delete is delete forward. And on the Mac keyboard, delete is delete backwards.
Do you remember, Nick would, I think, remember this mostly, is Esther?
I loved Esther. We all did.
I got her a keyboard at one point. This was way back in the...
Oh, yeah.
She had more... shift keys and function keys and alt keys set up to do so many different things. She literally had on either side of her screen when I went over to her house, and they were in bold print,
a roadmap that if she hit, say, Alt Shift and this button, it would start this program. If she did Shift and Space, you know, different combinations, Control, it would do this function. She had so many function keys set up on that keyboard to where, you know, it was unbelievable. Like I say, she needed this diagram on both sides of the screen to do all the various keys, and yep. I think she'd be lost now.
She would be. But she needed it, and she used them constantly.
She was always so proud. I just found another way to schedule 12 more. Now, leave it up to you, Esther. God love her. God love her. She was such a sweetie.
We did love Esther. We really did.
For you folks, that's an old dear friend of ours. Back in the days when we first started up Soundbites, she used to be doing my job, more or less the engineer of the program, because Nick, Steve, and I, for the longest time, till we came here, got to sit on our butts behind glass and just take our directions from Esther. And then when we went to another place, Rob Litton would get up on the step stool and point his fingers over at us, because he was still in grade school. And then we moved over here, and now I take charge.
Yep.
So it's come a long ways.
It's come a long way.
Well, I was talking to folks because, again, going back to the days when we talked about the old computers and that type of stuff, and, you know, for me, they asked me, so what was, excuse me, what was the very first computer you ever worked on? I go, well, there was actually two of them. It was an old Honeywell system, which was punch cards, and a Trash 80.
Yep.
And those were the ones. And we used to have to set up the computers in the old computer system at Building 6 with wires and everything else, because it was an old Honeywell system that fed in punch cards. And in the room next to it was really cool. After we had the system up for a while, we got a brand new Trash 80. And we had 8-inch floppies with 32K floppies.
We called it the Trash 80, but for its day...
Oh, it was... I loved it.
It was a pretty hot little box.
Was a nice
really
little,
was.
It was very dependable, never gave me any problems. And I took out a PC magazine. It was the first terminal emulator program, so we could couple and get out onto the internet and get to the BBSs. Because when we were doing late night shifts, you could do that.
When we were writing games for the TRS-80 in college, there was no sound card in it. But apparently the magnetic shielding was so poor that
it
generated huge amounts of noise. Mm-hmm. So we put a detuned radio next to the computer.
Yeah, tuned it all the way down to one end. I think it was the low end.
AM band, yeah. And then when there was an explosion, you know, our spaceship exploded, we put the screen white, and that put a burst of noise into the radio, and so it sounded like an explosion.
So
we, you know, we had the fake
music.
Sound card. Yeah.
There were actual music programs you could run that would play on that detuned radio. It was very, very cool stuff. You know, just because it didn't have something didn't mean you couldn't do something.
Right.
Had to figure out how to make it work.
We always had to leave the TRS.
More creative minds.
Yeah, we had to leave the TRS-80 in the other corner of the room, away from all the other computers.
Right.
Because it messed them up, too.
That was a lot of fun working that machine. And, of course, back then, you know, it's not the graphical interface. We were connecting to the actual internet out there and grabbing information and everything else, and it was still in the infancy.
Yeah,
I mean, not like the days when you first introduced me to it, and I was up all night. So,
how is this my fault?
Nick, it always has been, always will be. Build a bridge, get over it. You know I'm not going to let you get out of that one, no matter.
Listen, let me tell you what, though.
Wait a minute. Let me just interrupt for 1 second.
Okay.
How bad were you when Greenlight came?
That's just what I was about to say. I had an Enright moment. When I first got Greenlight, it is so
addicting,
fast and so addicting that I was going all over the place. Suddenly I looked at my watch and said, well, I have to drive my daughter to work at 3 a.m., in half an hour, so I guess I'll just stay up.
Still up, yep. According to the Wikipedia page on the TRS-80, the reason they discontinued the Model 1 is that they couldn't. It would cost too much to re-engineer to meet FCC requirements on EMI.
Yeah.
Yep. And so people playing games used an AM radio.
Yep. Yep. Hey.
But they were very hot little toys. I actually fell in love with the Exidy Sorcerer, and it was another cool computer. The big difference was it used a Z80 processor, which was the same as the 8088, except about twice as fast. And so it did some pretty cool things.
Can't spell either Exidy or Sorcerer.
Exidy is E-X-I-D-Y, and Sorcerer, I believe, was just S-O-R-C. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I can remember, though, at one point, I worked over in Building 18, and it was powdered solution at Kodak, and they had an analytical computer there. Brand new, this tall box and all that. And we were doing it for entering analytical information and that for film. Well, we found out that if we took, at the time, 5 1/4 floppy, we could get out of that program, go to a DOS prom. We found this program, Lunar Landing.
Oh, I love great that. Great program.
You remember
that
one?
I don't know if I ever landed well, but I love that
I
program.
Yeah, I never landed, but I loved the game.
So in our downtime, we would shove this 5 1/4 floppy in and play Lunar Landing because we saved it on a disc. And, you know, oh, it was fun. We'd sit there and play it during our lunches and all that time. The only problem is, I'll never forget, Tommy forgot to take the disc out at the end of the shift because we worked nights.
Yeah.
Our boss comes in the morning, and here's this, you know, at the time, $80,000 piece of equipment.
Yeah.
And he looks at the screen. He goes, "What is this?" Tommy goes, "Oh, forgot to reboot." Took the disc out and goes, "I did not see that. I did not see that." He was really cool about it. He understood. But here's this piece of equipment, analytical this machine, and we're using it to play Lunar Landing.
I found it.
Online?
A web interface.
Yeah. Well, you can join in the fun, by the way. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415 with your reminiscences or questions or comments, or we don't really care. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right, we've been around longer than Lunar Lander. It's Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Patrick from Batavia, New York on the line. Welcome, Patrick. What's up?
Well, first of all, let me say I appreciate you taking my call. I called in a couple of years ago, and I gave my question, and the person that listened to it said, "Nah, I don't think so. Maybe some other time." So you're very open to taking this.
Thank you.
And the other thing I noticed is that I think it was Dave was mentioning about the on-air fundraising, and he made a comment about 60s and 70s music, which I really love.
Yes.
So I didn't catch when that's going to be, though.
Oh, it isn't.
No, I got it.
Yeah, no, I.
But I got my. It's a funny thing about when you tune into a radio show at some point and they say, "Yeah, in 60s and 70s music," and you go, "Because you didn't hear what happened beforehand."
Taking it out of context.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing: I am switching over from a Time Warner to a local fiber optic. And right now, I did a speedtest.net. It came up with. It's 1.52 megabytes per second.
Wow, that's pretty slow.
Yeah. So what? Now, it's not the green light. It's another one. I'm not going to give my advertiser because they don't pay me. But they're advertising 100 megabytes per second. Am I really going to see that when I turn it on? And I know, Nick, you were saying that it kind of blew your mind there, and when you turn on your machine?
Yeah, I get generally speaking, I get somewhere between 118 and 122 megabits per second, which is a little faster than I'm paying for, which is fine with me.
Well, I thought I was paying for 5 to 10, and I got 1.52 now. So, but that's a cable issue that they... Is that right that they say that when they are so popular in your neighborhood that you have to suffer?
Yeah, pretty much. The way this works is this. With something like any cable connection,
mm-hmm.
every neighborhood has something called a head end, and mm-hmm. you connect to the head end. When there are fewer than 100 people on a head end, you have pretty good service.
And that head end is connected to usually a backbone. And so say the head end has 1,000 megabit. So if you have 10 people on it, you divide that by 10. If you have 1,000 people on it, you divide that by 1,000.
Well, ish.
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 Yeah.
But those of you who are network technicians, don't call in and correct us. the basic idea here, though, is if you've got fewer than 100 people on your head end, you're pretty fast. You get more than 100 people on your head end, then you're all sort of competing, and it gets to be what are called collisions, where you try to send a packet out, and it bumps into somebody else's packet, and then you both have to resend. Well, that slows things down. So the connection may still be 10 or 50 or 100 megabits, but because there are so many people on your head end, your effective rate is much, much, much lower.
And what the similar issues for DSL and the phone company, but they call theirs a central office.
Right,
CO,
same idea,
yeah.
and also for like a wireless router.
Yeah.
In a home, you won't notice it, but in a business, you get more than 100 people on a wireless router. Same idea. Your theoretical limit is 255. Practical limit is about 100.
And so what the companies do is when they reach that limit, they're supposed to break it down.
Just let me ask a little follow-up.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, is there any way for them just to easily open the bandwidth, or do they have to put up another set of whatever you call that home box?
You have
there?
To put up another head end.
Okay, head end, yeah.
And those are not cheap.
Don't like to do that.
Right, they're not cheap. I have a friend who apparently lives at the end of his line, and they had to put in another head end just for his house, so he gets massive good speed out of his cable provider. But for most people, it isn't quite that good. Fiber runs a kind of a little differently because of where it actually meets the trunk. So when they say you get 100 megabits, the likelihood is you will get what they say you will get. Also, of course, they've got any number, you know, tens of thousands of fiber optic cables in one of those big cables. So you'll get better speeds out of that. So theoretically, when you switch to your local fiber provider, you will see a good increase, and you should get close to, obviously, if, you know, let's say 100 megabit. If you get 98. You know, anywhere close to 100 or a little over 100, you should be fine.
And that's one of the reasons that both the cable company and the phone company talk about up to, you know, 10 megabits, because, you know, we can't control the congestion. But if you're paying for 10 and getting one, there's something wrong somewhere.
Yeah, that's a problem. The other thing is try it at different times of the day. Back in the day when I was on night shift, and I got onto the internet at like 3 or 4 in the morning. I owned the internet even with my cable provider because nobody else was on. But at 9 o'clock at night, when every kid on earth is playing games and watching movies and doing whatever, the system was really slow. So try it at different times of the day as well. You may find that the congestion is only in the early. Of course, that's when you want to watch anyway, right? That's when you want to be doing stuff. But that may be that at other times of the day, you're going to get your 10 meg or whatever you're paying for. Does that make sense, Patrick? We lost Patrick, too. I don't know.
Craziness in the phone.
He may have just asked his question and then hung up to listen.
No, what's happening is this box is dropping the calls.
The box is dropping the calls. All right, if that happens, if you get dropped, please feel free to call back. We apologize. for the system dropping calls.
And that's because of this head end and central office issue. That's why sometimes you're told you can't get that service, because they would have to spend, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to build a new head end to reach you. There's a distance limit
there,
in,
we should
in
have
both
Patrick
the technologies.
Back.
Oh, good. Hi. Patrick, are you there?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
sorry about that.
Yeah, just repeat the last 3 minutes. I'll listen to the replay, and if I ask you a question, follow-up, and you answered, I'll listen to the replay.
Okay, excellent.
I thought it was me. I thought, you see, I'm holding my cell phone, which normally I use a headset with, but I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
My other question was, I happen to be out there. They do a pre-install for this where they'll bring the fiber optic up to your house, and then the company does a final install. So I said to them, so this is just for me? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what if two doors down they want to do it? And they said, oh, we run another wire.
Yep.
But what I guess kind of boggles my mind here is at some point they all go back to like you mentioned that end box or whatever.
Right.
The cable, right?
Right.
So how does it not? I mean, so you're. I mean, if you say yes, I trust you. These people, I don't know. It really is somehow a unique connection to me, or does it get bundled together somewhere?
Here's the deal. If you think of a network, there's one giant pipe that's called the backbone,
mm-hmm.
and off of that you have secondary pipes on a cable system that go to a head end, and those are much smaller pipes, right?
Right.
So when your congestion happens, it happens at the head end because you're going into a fairly small pipe. With fiber, you're going right into the backbone. So there's no congestion between you and the backbone because you're connected right to it. And the connection in the backbone is so huge, they don't even notice your traffic.
Okay. Do you get any kind of a drop-off if you have, like, let's say your wireless connection? Is that much slower? I'm sure you have a lot of wireless.
Units, well, right. Most wireless systems max out at anywhere between 20 and 40 megabits per second. So if you're connected to, and of course, if you have a router in your home, and that's only a 10 megabit router, then the fastest connection you'll get is 10 megabits.
Okay.
But if you buy a 100 megabit router and you're connected directly into it with a Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable, then you will have your 100 megabits. Also assuming that the... Okay. All right, here we go. Let's back up a bit. You've got 100 megabits coming into your fiber box.
Mm-hmm.
From that, if you have a direct line to your computer, a Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable will easily handle 100 megabits.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's up to the network card in your computer. If you've only got a 10 megabit network card, you're still only going to get 10 megabits. But most of them nowadays are gigabit cards, so that's not an issue. Then it's the speed of your computer. Pretty much any computer made in the last 10 years is going to handle 100 megabits fine. But if your fiber connection goes into a router, then if that router is only a 10 megabit router, you'll never be faster than 10 megabits.
Yeah, I'm getting the service from them, so I'm thinking they're going to bring the router.
I don't
know. The Wi-Fi. I know, I'm not asking you.
Right. You'll have to ask them that.
Yeah, many of them just give you one computer.
Yeah, they bring the router, so then maybe that's something for me to be prepared to have a router just in case they don't bring it.
Well, yeah, ask them. Ask them if they provide a router as well as their initial one computer connection.
Uh-huh.
If they do not, then you need to go out and buy yourself a router. And honestly, the price difference between a 100 megabit router and a gigabit router is so small, you might as well get the gigabit router.
Yeah. And you can probably guess I called you because the install is Monday morning.
There you go. This is the afternoon.
It's all in the timing.
I called you a week ahead of time when I could have done something about it, right?
Yeah, well, you still have plenty of afternoon to head out to a store.
And Sunday.
And Sunday to head out to a store and pick up a router.
Yeah, many of the stores are still open.
If you've only got one machine, you don't need a router.
Right.
if you've got multiple machines or you've got a laptop, then you need
to go wireless.
Wireless, yeah. Yeah, some services include the wireless router as part of their fee, and some don't. So you usually have to ask them. And in fact, sometimes we've seen the services that do include the wireless router, it's often a crappy, cheap router.
Often it is, yes.
And so getting your own that you
free,
can manage.
It's free, so you're getting what you paid for.
That's exactly right.
But isn't that weird that they would put something in that could possibly denigrate their service?
Generally not, but they might. You know what? Sometimes the geeks decide, and sometimes the bean counters decide.
Yep. It's all in the numbers and, you know, their bottom line.
And mostly it's the bean counters.
We've even heard stories about installers who will come as a on a service call and you're having internet problems. They'll swap out your internet router with one they had in the truck that they swapped out on their last call because they were having problems.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as he does his call and leaves, it's not his fault anymore.
Right.
And so then
he switched out the router.
Yeah, you have to
and
call
if
the company.
You saw them bringing equipment, you would say, oh, they brought equipment in.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
right.
There's no paint on it or anything like that.
And that's,
you know, you wouldn't notice it.
Now, we're not saying that any of that happens anywhere around here.
What you're saying. You're just talking in general.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And one of the differences here in Rochester with Time Warner Cable, you can buy your own cable modem instead of renting it from Time Warner. But,
yeah, I should have done that. I've noticed I've been paying $8 a month, or I'd be embarrassed to tell you how.
Well, but yeah, by the time you add the taxes and fees, it's a lot closer to $10.
Mm-hmm.
So far with Frontier, you can't do that. They don't let you buy your own.
Yeah, no, they don't let you buy your own
DSL router.
But yeah, so
in Rochester, in other cities, they do, which is frustrating.
So if you've got more than one computer, and or you've got a laptop, then you're probably best off this afternoon or tomorrow to go out and buy yourself a wireless router. Right? Again, on the wireless, you won't get more than 27 or 47 megabits per second. Depends entirely on both what router you get and how fast the wireless is in your computer.
And don't get the cheapest one, because generally they even though they're rated at, you know, 2.4 gigahertz at 100 megabit, they may not be able to do that.
But you will on a connected machine, a machine that's wired into your router, get the full speed of that 100 megabit.
All right.
Okie doke.
Yeah. Oh, one more quick thing. And if this has never even been feasible, just say it and then I'll hang up. But I'm surprised there wasn't any kind of a forwarding service that some company set up for emails, because of course I'm going to lose my Time Warner email and all that. That, you know, but I maybe that's theoretically impossible. Or
well,
technically
you,
impossible.
Well, you Time can do Warner would have to be the person, would have to be the people who did the forwarding, and once you're not paying them anymore, they
That's the key. You can set up forwarding yourself in your Time Warner account, and then, you know, maybe pay for it another month while you give everyone else your new address. But when you quit paying for your Roadrunner service, you're going to lose your Roadrunner mail address.
This is why we always tell people, do not use your provider's email service.
Uh-huh.
There are lots of free accounts. Gmail has them. Everybody has them. Get yourself a Gmail account or a something else account and use that instead of your internet service provider. That way you're not tied into that provider if you decide to move.
Yeah. I have a Gmail account for a couple of things, but I'll just have to. One last thing I'll comment on, make that I'll let you know, but over the years I've taken out a lot of things where you say, we'll send you a free video if you give us your email address. And this might cut down on my email, which currently I think runs around 31,000 emails in my Outlook, because I've got room, so I just never delete.
Let me give you a great hint. Gmail, you can say, let's say your and mine is not, so please, people, do not email this address. It's not me. Nick@gmail, right? Let's say you're in nick@gmail.com.
Right.
If I say Nick plus the plus sign, nick+spam@gmail.com, that mail will still come to me, but now I can flag it as spam. So when I sign on to somebody else, I always use Nick plus something. We got to go. Take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1, 1:39 p.m.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edner.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have our friend Scott from Buffalo on the line. Welcome, Scott. What's up?
A very big problem with the internet.
Uh-oh.
Here. Let me tell you my setup. So, connected to the cable modem,
Time Warner?
It's a router for Apple.
The airport time capsule?
Yeah. I have airport. Okay. Connected to the, and then... Now my iMac is connected directly to that airport right now. In the house, we have a number of iPads. We have another iMac. All these things are getting Wi-Fi broadcast from the broadcaster there. The only thing that won't get the internet is my iMac. Even when I change it over to Wi-Fi, it won't get internet. Whether I have it on Wi-Fi or I have it directly connected, it won't do it. The iPads and the iPhones, all everything else gets my wife's iMac gets Wi-Fi, but I can't get Wi-Fi. I can't get the internet. And one thing I did do was I had a program called NetBarrier here. And so a few days ago, I turned NetBarrier off, and I had internet for a day. Now I'm back to not having internet again, and NetBarrier is off.
You might want to check to make sure NetBarrier is still off, because a lot of those firewalls and antivirus programs will turn themselves back on after a while.
I just checked. It's off. It says off anyway. And I clicked it on and it's off, and I'm still not getting internet. Could it be some firewall in my computer that got turned on by mistake?
It could be, yes. There's two places to check. In the system preferences under the Apple menu, you can check your network preferences to make sure that you're getting an internet address on your computer.
And then
in the security preference, there is a tab for the firewall, and you can see if your firewall is on and if you're blocking traffic. Typically, though, the firewall on your computer blocks inbound traffic. It generally doesn't stop outbound traffic, but there are options to prevent other programs on your computer from getting to the internet. So if that's turned on and set too high, then it's possible that firewall is blocking your internet connection.
I do see it says firewall is on.
Okay. True. You can
I never used to have it on, but it says it's on.
Yeah, you can try turning it off and see if that works. There should also be a button called Firewall Options or Settings. And you can look in there to see what programs you've allowed through the internet. So maybe you've accidentally disallowed Safari through the firewall, but Firefox and Chrome could work.
I haven't changed anything on here. It might have been when the machine updated to 10.10.2.
Yeah, Yosemite tries to activate more security features. They want you to turn on whole disk encryption. They want you to turn on the firewall. It does make the computer more secure, but if you're too secure, then you can't do what you want. So the most secure computer doesn't let anybody in or out.
The best thing to do is to check if there's anything in there that shouldn't be in there, like Steve said. Check about whether or not one of your browsers is locked out or whatever.
I
just noticed that it's that block all incoming connections is checked. Is that it?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to turn that off and see what happens.
Okay.
And it all, there also might be different settings in back in the network preferences between the wireless and the wired. We sometimes see people will accidentally type in a DNS address. So you back in the early days, we had to type addresses into the preferences, and if you type the wrong address in, then your computer can't get to the internet right.
Right.
Well, I have a link, direct link to www.google.com, and it's not showing up.
Right, there's got to be a problem somewhere else. Listen, can you, what's Google's, can you ping Google?
Yeah.
Hold on a half a second.
So, yeah, the other way to get to it is by address rather than by name. And if you, in your address bar, I need W's, type 216.239.232.20, that's Google's address. And so,
not 232, just 32.
Oh, no, just 32?
Yeah, it's 216.
That was dot. Wait.
Yep.
Let me go back.
Yeah.
I got 219.
216.
239.
It's 216. 239. Let me start again. 216. Dot 239. Dot 32. Dot 20.
And that's the actual address of the Google server. There's something on the internet called the name server, which is like the phone book, because people can remember google.com. We can't remember and can't even say it when we're reading it, the actual numbers. So that can let you know whether it's a DNS error in your computer or not versus a different type of internet connection.
So if you can, instead of where you normally would type google.com, you put in that number and you can get to Google, then the problem is your DNS setup is wrong, and that can be fixed fairly easily.
I've tried that, and while we've been talking, I switched back to Wi-Fi. I had it on Ethernet, now it's back to Wi-Fi, and it's still not doing anything. Firewall is off, and firewall options have nothing in them.
If you, well, we're getting kind of deep now. If you bring up a terminal window, terminal from the utilities folder.
And that's tough for me.
Yeah.
Utilities. Okay.
And you can type ping google.com. If you get an answer back, that means your computer is talking at the very lowest level to the internet. And if you don't, then there's something deeper wrong in the computer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it sounds like, Scott, and I hate to say this, somebody's going to have to actually sit in front of it.
That's what I'm afraid. Probably I'm up for that. So I want terminal. And what do I do in terminal?
You're going to type commands, ping, P-I-N-G, and space, and then www.google.com. And then you got to hit Control C to stop it from pinging.
Right.
And people said the Mac didn't have a command line.
And theoretically, you should come back saying 64 bytes from to whatever the number is over and over and over again. 64 bytes, 64 bytes, 64 bytes.
So it's taking me an average of 27
milliseconds. And if it doesn't do that, then we know that there is a real blockage in your machine that is preventing anything from getting to the internet, and that's what somebody else is going to have to look at.
Okay, well, it looks like that's where I'm going to go now.
Yep, sorry.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right.
I actually have a machine at the office that's doing that. I can ping by address, but I can't ping by name. So I got to find out how to flush the DNS cache and get it to reload the DNS table.
Right.
Or check his host file too. Now that I'm thinking about it, I was Googling around. There was something about malicious host files keep getting added. Although it's for malware bytes, so it's probably on Windows.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that when you know how the internet works, it's amazing that it works at all, and when it doesn't work, it's often really tricky to figure out why.
Exactly. There's the problem is there are so many places Well, as you heard Steve and Scott talking, could be here, could be there, could be there, could be here. And at some point you start getting into the deep kimchi, and somebody's really at that point got to take sit down in front of it and take a look at it to figure out where the issue is. Sadly, not all of it is as easy as it could be. So that's too bad. But there's a lot that...
Yeah, that's one thing yet we haven't been able to achieve is to log on and see somebody's computer within their house.
Right. Well, you can with the right product, but if you can't get on the internet, then somebody really does have to sit in front of it to look at it. There's no other way around that.
And there's been a huge surge in fake tech support with either phone calls or emails saying you're infected and you better let us into your computer.
Yeah.
And most of those are fake, and they want to steal your money. And we used to say if you didn't call them, it's fake. Right. But we're seeing people are searching for Microsoft phone number, and they see an ad for Microsoft Help and call them. It's not Microsoft. It's an ad for someone that may not be good either.
Right. Before I forget, one of our listeners was talking about passwords this week, and I just wanted to reiterate that passwords nowadays, complexity is important. That is to say, uppercase and lowercase and numbers and symbols. But more important is length. Short passwords, you have 8 characters or fewer, you might as well not even have a password. It's broken in seconds. You need a long password, and it can be a sentence. The Golden Girls is the greatest TV show on earth, 43217.
But don't make it a famous quote, because those are searched for by the bad guys.
Right, but if you can make it a fairly long password with capitals and lowercase and numbers and symbols, then you're secure. But short passwords, for God's sake, stop using 123456.
That's the password of my luggage.
or 12345 or password or,
monkey is common for some reason.
Monkey is common. We used to say monkey 32, happy 32 monkey.
Yeah.
Which is actually not a terribly bad password when you get right down to it.
Except we've said it too many times. That's probably in the... Oh, my God. We should look at the password tables and see if it's in there. We affected the hackers.
All right. Listen, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I do want to apologize to all of those of you who called in at the last minute. Call earlier next week. We're more than honored to take your calls, but not at 5 of. It's just not going to happen. I want to say don't go anywhere, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. So you've got, 2.5 hours, is it, of some great music coming up. But we're done. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week. Join us tomorrow night in Second Life, and it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.